In the matter of Wiggins versus Hackensack Meridian Health, can we please have appearances of counsel?
Richard Ham, the law firm Columbia Ham, on behalf of Dr. Joyal in South Plainfield.
Almost good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. We're going to go until around 12:30. I know we'll get through the first. I'm optimistic we'll get through the first argument. We'll take a 30-minute recess and resume with whatever follows. Mr. Shah, please.
Before I begin, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
That's fine.
Sir Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The issue before this court arises from tragic circumstances, but is relatively straightforward. The question is whether a treating physician who claims he was treating a decedent in his capacity as both a gastroenterologist and an internist, whether an affidavit of merit supplied by an internist, which is kind for kind, is sufficient under the affidavit of merit statute. 13 years ago, in Buck versus Henry, this court answered that question, yes, it is sufficient. In Buck, this court stated, a physician may practice in more than one specialty, and the treatment involved may fall within that physician's multiple specialty area. In that case, an affidavit of merit from a physician specializing in either area will suffice, end quote. Now, there's a lot of discussion in the appellate division decision, as well as in the briefings, about whether or not this language is dicta. And I submit to you that it is not dicta, but regardless, this court now has a chance in the context of this case to reaffirm that that is the principle that controls when a treating physician claims he was treating in multiple areas, presenting what we call the overlapping specialties problem. The language in Buck and the rule in Buck that we're asking this court to adopt, there are several different factors that counsel in favor of adopting it. The first is the statutory text, the legislative history surrounding the Patients First Act, as well as the original affidavit of merit statute, and traditional tort principles. I'd like to start, if I could, with the statutory text. Section 41 sets forth the requirements for an affiant submitting an affidavit of merit as well as a testifying expert in medical malpractice cases. And I want to focus specifically on Part A. And it says that if the treating physician is a specialist or subspecialist, then the person offering the affidavit of merit or an expert report must also practice in that specialty or subspecialty. If the treating physician is board certified, then there are additional requirements. One of those ways to meet those requirements is if the affiant or expert witness is credentialed by a hospital to meet the specific or to perform the specific procedure at issue, or they can be board certified and then they have to be able to show that they're an active clinical practice or teaching in that specific area. So that's how we can deal, or that's how we get to the kind for kind requirements. There is nothing in that statute, nothing in that statute's plain text that says if a physician is practicing in multiple areas, that suddenly the plaintiff must find expert or experts or affiants to say that they deviated from the standard of care in each and every single area that they claim to be practicing in. Somebody who is practicing medicine and deviates from the standard of care in their capacity as an internist is no less liable simply because they say, well, I was also treating this patient in my capacity as a gastroenterologist, as a neurosurgeon, an orthopedist. It simply doesn't follow from the statute, which speaks again in terms of specialist in the singular, or specialty, again, in the singular. If the legislature had intended to cover the entire waterfront of a physician's practice, they could have included a provision or words to that effect by simply saying specialties or multiple specialty areas, any number of ways that they could have worded it, and they did not. Similarly, the legislative history doesn't support the appellate division's decision that we need an affidavit of merit to cover every single specialty area that the doctor practices in. The purpose of the original affidavit of merit statute was to weed out frivolous lawsuits. The Patients First Act then raised the bar with respect to scientific evidence, making sure that if you had a doctor who was treating a patient in their capacity as, let's say, a brain surgeon, that you couldn't get an orthopedist to come in and testify against that doctor with respect to the standard of care and the deviation from that standard of care. Kind for kind. But if you have an affidavit of merit, which we have in this case, that says that this doctor who claims he was practicing medicine and treating the decedent in his capacity as both an internist and a gastroenterologist, if you have an affidavit of merit that says that he deviated from the standard of care in one of those areas, that is not a frivolous lawsuit that should be weeded out. That is on its face, at least a prima facie face showing of a meritorious lawsuit. We've shown, at least at the threshold stage, without any discovery, that there is a basis for believing that this doctor deviated from the standard of care in his capacity as an internist. The idea that he may or may not have deviated from the standard of care in his capacity as a gastroenterologist is a different question, but it's also an irrelevant question at that stage.
Counsel, we understand the broad principle you're making with respect to legislative history. Does the legislative history actually address this scenario of multiple specialties?
It does not. Not anything that we found with respect to the sponsor statement or anything in the case law that discusses the legislative history. There's nothing that says specifically if there is a doctor who claims to be treating in multiple specialty areas that you only need a affidavit of merit with respect to one or both areas or multiple other areas. There's nothing in there. But if we go to the overarching purpose of the affidavit of merit statute, we know that it's to weed out frivolous lawsuits. If the lawsuit doesn't have merit, if you cannot get somebody in the same specialty as the doctor to come in and say that this doctor deviated from the standard of care, then you can't go forward. But that doesn't apply here, and that doesn't advance that goal here, when what we're doing is allowing a doctor to use the fact that he operates in two spheres to say, well, you only showed that I was negligent or made a threshold showing of negligence as to one and not the other. Therefore, this case can't proceed against me. There's nothing in the legislative history to support that. There's been nothing.
Does the general purpose of the statute to weed out frivolous lawsuits answer this question? Because it seems to me that the legislature saying this is what we want to do doesn't really tell us how to interpret the statute on this specific particular point. Am I right about that?
I think it does tell us. I think the general purpose does tell us, or at least provide the roadmap to how this court should ultimately rule when looking at this issue. And the reason I say that is because this court has traditionally looked to common law principles, tort principles, and the purpose of the statute in light of those principles. So for example, if we go to Haviland, one of this court's cases, where you had somebody who was a technician, imaging technician, and the individual, the affidavit of merit was not supplied because the plaintiff's position was is that, well, he's not a licensed person. And this court said, yes, if you look at traditional principles of agency, you're only suing him and holding the medical center liable on a vicarious liability or respondeat superior theory, those principles indicate that you don't need an affidavit of merit because the negligence that you're ascribing to the defendant comes from his role as a imaging technician, which isn't a licensed person.
That's totally the licensed person versus not is respectfully a different issue.
I understand.
I'm not saying it's inappropriate to cite Havlin, but I don't think it answers the question either.
I'm not suggesting that any of the court's precedent, other than obviously the language in Buck, addresses this issue squarely. What I'm suggesting is that when we look at what is a frivolous or a lawsuit that lacks merit, it's one where you really can't make out a showing of, if it's a medical malpractice case, of negligence. But where you can make out such a case, such as this case here, where you have somebody who's come forward and said that Dr. Goyle deviated from the standard of care in his capacity as an internist, putting aside the issue of whether or not he deviated from the standard of care as a gastroenterologist, if you have somebody who's come forward and said that, the idea that by throwing this case out or dismissing it because you don't have that additional negligence doesn't advance the statutory goals of weeding out frivolous lawsuits. We can show negligence. We can make a prima facie showing of a duty, standard of care, and a deviation. We can obviously get through to causation and damages at a later point, but at least with respect to the threshold showing, I do think that that statutory purpose is not served by allowing the appellate division's decision to stand.
So would you be in a different position if Dr. Goyle's affidavit of merit had said that the prescription of allopurinol had a specific gastroenterological purpose?
And that was the, just so I can clarify, Justice
Hoffman. That was in addition to what he already had written. And if he ascribed that prescription to having a particular and specific gastroenterological purpose with regard to Ms. Carden, would you be in a different position?
I don't think so, because ultimately, if you practice in both spheres, you owe a duty of care in both spheres. So he still has to practice and meet the standard of care as an internist. He may have an argument as to causation. He may have an argument or lack of causation. He may have an argument with respect to being able to show why what he did is reasonable because he was also wearing his gastroenterology hat. But that's a question for the jury. When we're talking just simply about whether or not you have a threshold showing of merit, which is what the affidavit of merit statute is intended to address, then the question of whether or not he said that he was prescribing it for a specific gastroenterological purpose, hope I said that correctly, for that purpose, we don't believe and submit, defeat the claim or say that now you have to bring in somebody who's going to say that because he added or tagged a sentence to a specialty statement.
You would concede that as an internist in this case, that particular position, that particular opinion about the prescription of allopurinol and its gastroenterological purpose could not really be responded to, couldn't be met without it, by anyone other than some of the gastroenterological specialty.
I believe I would concede that if you didn't have anybody to come in and rebut that argument at a later stage in the case, that would be before the jury, and you could get up there at closing arguments after presenting the evidence and essentially slam the table and say, this is why he did it. They have nothing to be able to say.
And I wasn't just talking about a jury. I was talking about at the affidavit of merit stage, you would agree that that specific opinion could not be responded to, could not be countered by an internist who didn't have a gastroenterological specialty.
I would submit that it could not be responded to, but I would also be careful to clarify that you don't need to respond to it. All we need to do is make a threshold showing of merit.
If the doctor had said, I prescribed allopurinol for this particular gastrointestinal purpose and only as a gastroenterologist, you're saying that it's still okay to get an affidavit of merit from an internist who says who knows what because they can't respond to the gastroenterology statement. I think that's what Justice Hoffman was asking. If the affidavit says, I only prescribe this in my capacity as a gastroenterologist and here's the gastroenterological reason why I did so, how can an internist adequately respond to that?
So I didn't understand the question that way. I thought the question that was asked was if he just tagged that sentence onto what he already had in the specialty statement.
So I'll clarify. I like Justice Apter's question better than mine. So why don't you go ahead and answer hers?
Sure. So the answer to that question is that no, you couldn't do that.
Okay.
If he stepped forward and he said, I prescribed this medication in my capacity as a gastroenterologist, then we would be left with the fallback, which is the waiver provision to say, look, we've asked all these gastroenterologists. We don't understand how he prescribed this anti-gout medication to treat kidney stones in his capacity as a gastroenterologist.
So that tell us that the language of Buck, whether it was dicta or wasn't dicta, is a little bit too vague? Because Buck said a physician may practice in more than one specialty in the treatment of all major physicians multiple specialty areas. In that case, an affidavit of merit from physician specializing in either area will suffice. If you had a doctor who said, this particular prescription, whatever I've done to treat, this particular prescription was only about gastroenterology, then I think properly conceded, you would need a gastroenterologist. But Buck seems to say, if the general treatment was within multiple specialty areas, one or the other is enough.
So the way I read that language is that if the treating physician, the defendant doctor, is saying, I'm treating this patient in multiple specialty areas, then the rule in Bach, at least the one that we're asking this court to explicitly adopt to the extent that anybody believes the language is dicta, is that then a affidavit of merit addressing one of those specialty areas the doctor is claiming that he was treating the patient in is sufficient.
But we have a very, very precise alleged area of negligence here, and that is a prescription of a pharmaceutical. So if the doctor said, I treated her for years as internal medicine, as her internist, and then also as her gastroenterologist, as this doctor apparently did, colonoscopies and so forth, but the prescription specifically dealt with one area or the other, wouldn't you have to have a doctor whose expertise was relevant to the prescription in a case like this, which is all about a prescription?
I would have to have a doctor who is kind for kind, in the sense that if Dr. Goyal says, I'm prescribing medication in my capacity as a gastroenterologist only, putting aside any other specialty, only in gastroenterology, then we would have to get a gastroenterologist or revert to or resort to the waiver provision to say, here's why we can't get a gastroenterologist.
Please finish your answer, sir.
But if he's saying I'm practicing in two areas or three or four, then a affidavit of merit from somebody who's, again, kind for kind, we're not suggesting that we could pick, you know, a neurosurgeon in this case because he's an internist and a gastroenterologist. As long as that expert is kind for kind and matches the same specialty or the same board certification, then that is sufficient, because what we've shown is that Dr. Goyal has deviated from the standard of care with respect to that specialty area, which he can't do just simply because he practices in multiple specialty areas, right? You have a duty of care as to all of them when you're practicing in all of them.
So let's assume we accept your reading of Buck. And the affidavit of merit that you served gets you beyond the motion stage, and you proceed to pretrial discovery, and now you're at trial. Does the service of the affidavit of merit in internal medicine limit your proofs at the trial in such a way that you cannot then argue the doctor deviated from accepted standards within the gastroenterological field?
Just so I'm clear on the question, if we were to proceed past the affidavit of merit stage by saying that this is a non-frivolous suit, we have somebody who signed an affidavit of merit, and then if discovery reveals that there's a deviation from the standard of care as to a gastroenterologist, and then we're able to find somebody who is able to testify, another gastroenterologist who's kind for kind, I think that would be okay. What we could not do, I would concede, is have an internist talk about why Dr. Goyal's prescription of allopurinol, if he says this was in my capacity solely as a gastroenterologist, or here's why I did it with respect to gastroenterology, rebut that. Because again, the standards for testifying experts and for those who supply an affidavit of merit is the same. It comes from Section 41, which Section 27 then just simply adopts when talking explicitly about the affidavit of merit. So once we cross the threshold, it doesn't mean that everything's opened up and we can just do whatever we want. We still are confined by the statute with respect to our expert testimony, but we don't have to, we're not precluded because we didn't have somebody who was a gastroenterologist in the first 60 days of the case, because there's going to be discovery, there's going to be evidence, including depositions, which we didn't get any of in this case. And that evidence might reveal different deviations from the standard of care. And if one of those is in gastroenterology and somebody can come forward now and say, well, now I understand what the gastroenterological use is that he's claiming, and now I can address it, why it's a deviation, as long as it's kind for kind and it meets the contemporaneous requirements, you're okay.
So let's say there's a disputed issue of fact about why the doctor prescribed the medication. But we do have a specialty statement that says that he prescribed the medication and treated the patient involving specialties of internal medicine and gastroenterology. How do we deal with that disputed issue of fact about whether the medication was prescribed as an internist or not?
I don't believe that we have to, in that instance, really distinguish, at least as far as plaintiffs are concerned, as long as we meet the expert requirement. So if Dr. Goyal's position is a trial that I did all of this in my capacity, or I did this in both capacities, but here's why I did it with respect to gastroenterology, and there's a conflict between how I have to treat her in my capacity as a gastroenterologist and in my capacity as an internist, I'm assuming that's a fictitious world because gastroenterology is a subspecialty of internal medicine. So if there's a conflict, it would be odd. But let's assume that that's the case. I think it raises a different issue and question of, as to disclosure. I mean, if you have a patient and you're going to prescribe her medication and you're going to have to deviate from the standard of care in one area, and your defense for deviating is because you're a specialist in another, I think at an absolute minimum, that patient has a right to know that. Because if you're going to prescribe a medication that could potentially kill her, and in this case, you know, our contention is that it did, there has to be a disclosure made, and there wasn't one in this case. So I don't, just to, I hope I answered the question, but if the issue is that, well, he's claiming that he treats her in both capacities, and then at trial he were to say that he's treating her, or this is why the care fell outside the standard of care because it was within the standard of care for something else, I don't think that that moves the needle, but ultimately it's a question for a fact finder as to whether or not that's sufficient or there's adequate, reasonable care exercise there. I also want to just point out one other thing that's a little bit odd with respect to this case, which is that this case all comes down to the prescription of allopurinol, which we contend is contraindicated for somebody with Ms. Cardin's history. And the issue is whether or not he should have prescribed it at all. And I think we've all towed around this aspect of the case because, or at least the briefing does and the record does, because we're assuming, and I think the appellate division did, and I think incorrectly, and here's why. The appellate division assumes that Dr. Goyal has taken responsibility for prescribing this medication in his capacity as both an internist and as a gastroenterologist. And that's not exactly the case. So when we look at Dr. Goyal's certification, it's DA 55, paragraph 6, he talks about how he provided gastroenterological care. He talks about screenings, colon screenings and colonoscopies. Doesn't say anything about treating kidney stones. But more importantly, if we go to DA 167, which is a letter written by Dr. Goyal's counsel to plaintiff's counsel, and this is at a time just to sort of contextualize this.
Can you just say that site one more time?
DA 167. It's in the JFK appendix. This is, and just to contextualize it, this is at a time when the parties are going back and forth after the Ferreira conference, where our position, again, it's not on the record, but the conference wasn't on the record, but our position is that they were told by the trial judge to supply a certification stating that the prescription of allopurinol was in his capacity as gastroenterologist. We say the certification you supplied doesn't meet that standard. And there's a response in the record at DA 167, the JFK appendix, that says, well, we can't supply that certification. And the reason we can't supply it is because we don't even know if we prescribed allopurinol. So in other words, we're having a debate in the appellate division, the trial court, and now before this court, about whether or not this prescription fell within gastroenterology and or internal medicine and whether that matters for purposes of the statute. But the record actually reveals that this doctor doesn't even claim that he prescribed this medication in both areas.
And that's pre-discovery. That's normal lawyer behavior before discovery. Would you agree with that? A caution as to what's going to evolve when there's an exchange of medical records and there's an exchange of other documents. We're not conceding anything at this point. That's very common, isn't it?
I would agree that it's normal litigation behavior. The only thing I would say, though, is that the reason that's, I think that that's a, or I highlight that, is because if we go to the appellate division's decision, what the court says is, and this is page 374, quote, in short, a plaintiff cannot choose the specialty that the defendant physician was practicing when treating the patient. The plaintiff must respond to the information provided by the doctor in the answer, close quote. Now, what that indicates is that when the doctor is providing the specialty statement, he is actually addressing the specific medical malpractice at issue, in this case, the prescription of allopurinol. And he's saying, when I prescribed it, that I did so in my capacity as both. But the record reveals that that's not actually the case. And that because of what Justice Patterson described as normal lawyer behavior, the specialty...
Some might find that to be an oxymoron.
But because of that sort of being cautious, which I acknowledge is probably what happened with respect to specialty statement. But if you're going to ask, or because that specialty statement's there, this is what we're responding to. And the appellate division essentially saying is that that's got to be taken as gospel. And now you have to essentially address both of those areas as opposed to just one.
Not if you read Buck the way you do.
Correct. I believe that if you read Buck the way we do, and if the court highlights it and reaffirms it, especially that language, then you only have to address one. But the appellate division obviously felt differently about Buck.
And clearly the specialty statement is responding directly to Rule 4:5-3.
It is. It's responding directly to the rule, but it's not really addressing, I guess, the specific negligence in this case. It's really sort of towing around the idea that, well, I was always treating her in my capacity as both, without really addressing the specific medical negligence in this case.
But that's not what the rule requires. The rule simply requires the physician defending against a malpractice claim must include in the answer two things: the field of medicine in which he or she specialized at the time, and whether that treatment of the plaintiff involved that specialty. That's it.
I don't dispute that. I don't think I'm saying anything different with respect to that. What I'm simply saying is that this sentence from the appellate division in terms of getting an affidavit of merit that addresses that specialty statement in toto, as opposed to just one part of it, like we believe Buck says, what that does is it assumes that the doctor is providing this specialty statement in response to the specific allegation of medical malpractice, in this case, the prescription of allopurinol.
So it's all about just how you interpret the word treatment involved. So Buck specifically says a physician may practice in more than one specialty and the treatment involved may fall within that physician's multiple specialty areas. And you're saying it's not enough for the doctor to say generally, I treated this person as both a gastroenterologist and an internist. The treatment involved that we're specifically talking about is the prescription of allopurinol. And so if he wanted to say that he prescribed allopurinol as both a gastroenterologist and an internist, he would have had to say that, and he didn't actually say that anywhere.
He didn't say that, exactly. And that's the problem. And that's why I think putting so much stock in just the specialty statement and saying that when he says it, this is what you have to do is problematic. Now, I'm not suggesting that we dispense with that specialty statement at all. I think that you need it for the reasons that have come up in this court's prior precedent, specifically in Nicholas. We need to know, the plaintiffs need to know what certifications or what affidavit of merit, what qualifications, the affiant needs to have.
Now, any rule that this court adopts would apply to cases that are not quite as discreet as the way you describe your case. And obviously discovery is yet to happen, et cetera. But you are arguing that there is one moment and one act by the physician that constituted the malpractice, and that is the prescription. There may be cases out there where a doctor who is both an internist and also board certified in a subspecialty of gastroenterology is treating a complicated case in many different ways, that where the lines between the broader specialty of internal medicine and the subspecialty of gastroenterology are not so clear. So if we simply say that you just had to have one or the other, when it may evolve that both were intrinsic to the cause of action, are we really being faithful to the statute?
I believe you are, Justice Patterson. The reason I say that you're being faithful is because if you are, again, operating under the burdens of both specialties or multiple specialty areas, whether the specialty areas and subspecialties, if you are operating under those burdens, you have an obligation to exercise a duty of care that is consistent with all of them. Just because you specialize in multiple areas doesn't mean that the duty of care that you provide in one can now be lessened or is reduced. You still have to meet the standard with respect to every single one. And if you deviate, then again, traditional tort principles counsel against finding you liable or responsible, assuming the fact finder agrees.
But let's say there is alleged malpractice over a period of years in handling a patient, and the doctor says, "I treated this patient both as a gastroenterologist and as an internist." Why would it be sufficient to simply drill down to gastroenterology, for example, and not have somebody address internal medicine when both are directly relevant to the allegations of malpractice in that case?
Because the affidavit of merit statute is not looking at relevancy. It's looking at whether or not you have a frivolous or non-meritorious case.
And isn't that circular reasoning? Because the affidavit of merit statute is intended to weed out frivolous cases. And so there has to be some degree of relevancy. What's the cause of action? What's the alleged deviation from the standard of care? And what does this affidavit, this affiant who was creating this affidavit, tell us that gets the plaintiff over that initial hurdle?
Again, if the affidavit of merit addresses one of the specialty areas that the doctor, again, admits that he treated the patient in, or in his capacity, what he was practicing in, then that is what makes that case non-frivolous and meritorious, is because you're able to show that the deviation from the standard of care with respect to this specialty area. The fact that there may or—
Why aren't you asking for a narrower rule than Buck's language? Why, in your case, in which you say that the one act that is at the core of this case, the prescription, was all about kidney stones and wasn't that gastroenterology, it wasn't part of the practice in gastroenterology.
Because I believe the rule in Buck actually has both practical application, it's workable, and it makes sense and comports with traditional tort principles. Again, I understand the question about whether or not it's dicta, and you know, but I guess from a practitioner standpoint, you know, whether something is dicta is less self-evident than whether something is obscene.
Let's leave that aside.
Right.
Because you're here arguing what the rule should be.
And the rule, as we understand in the way that's been applied below, is working, right? If you have a person who can say that this doctor, this defendant doctor, even if he's practicing in, let's say, five areas, deviated from the standard of care in one, then that is, again, a meritorious case and claim. And that
do we know that? Because what happens if, as it evolves, the doctor practices in five areas? I don't know if somebody can actually do that, but let's say that the doctor does that, and it turns out that the what appeared at the beginning in terms of the relevant specialty, it turns out not to be. See what I'm saying? If doesn't it really matter what the core of the malpractice is?
And the answer to that question is that there's other procedures to deal with that, specifically the summary judgment procedure. So if there is, in fact, if you can show a threshold deviation at the affidavit of merit stage, again, we're talking about within the first 60 days, right, or maybe extended to 120, if you can show that, you can get past it. And then there's other facts that come to light after discovery, after depositions, after expert reports that suggest that, well, actually, he wasn't negligent. Then there's a summary judgment procedure to deal with those types of claims. But just because a case is dismissed at the summary judgment stage after discovery reveals that maybe the claim isn't as robust or forceful and it's dismissed, doesn't mean that the claim is frivolous. And that's what the affidavit of merit statute is aimed at. It's the frivolous lawsuits, you know, not the ones that have merit and that could potentially lead to a recovery, even if they don't, right? Because either a fact finder finds that there's not adequate proofs, or because a court finds that the summary judgment standard requires dismissal.
Anything you'd like to add, counsel?
No, Your Honor.
Other questions, anyone?
Chief.